brighten up later, but cooler than today at 9 or 10 Celsius. And for Scotland, we start off with outbreaks of rain quite extensively. That becomes limited to the borders by the end of the afternoon. Many central northern areas brighten up to sunshine, but feeling fresher at 11 to 13 Celsius. Alan.
Thank you, Matt. Well, now on Radio 4, it's time for the second of our series, which leading figures in Italian society gave their own view of their country's recent difficulties, including the looming economic crisis and electoral confusion after the dramatic rise of a new political force gathered around the comedian and satirist Beppe Grillo. Today, it's the turn of the journalist, TV presenter and one-time head of the Italian national television service RAI, Lucia Annunzanata. She presents her letter from Italy.
Lettera dall'Italia.
Lettera dall'Italia. Only one single light was shining. Montecitorio, built in 1653 by Bernini for the glory of the Ludovisi family, is the best-known palace of power in Italy. It sits on a little hill, as many great buildings in Rome do, dominating the hearts and minds of Italians as the House of the Parliament. In normal days, Piazza Montecitorio is bursting with activity. MPs, assistants, police, lobbyists, bodyguards, photographers, protesters, tourists. It goes on long into the night. But not that evening, November 16, 2011. A few days before, Silvio Berlusconi had vacated his seat as a Prime Minister of Italy. It was a response to pressure from Italian public opinion and the mistrust of international leaders. Mario Monti, a professor as dry as Silvio was flamboyant, had been given the job of guiding Italy and in the process avoiding an economic default. That night, Mario Monti was paying his first visit to the head of the parliament. As he exits Palazzo Montecitorio, he's alone. No bodyguard, no crowd. He reaches his car and leaves. Piazza Montecitorio is silent. It is as though Silvio's departure has emptied the city. As if Silvio has taken with him the flow of hate and love that always surrounds him. All of a sudden, Rome seems to have turned into Stockholm. I think I should introduce myself. My name is Lucia Annunziata and I am the editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post, Italy. This is where we are at the moment, as you can hear. But my real long career in the past 20 years has been really in television. I've been the editor-in-chief of one of the main news channels, TG3, and I've been president of RAI, the equivalent of BBC, as you know, RAI. Actually, RAI, it's a little bit bigger than BBC and maybe a little bit more important, at least we like to think so. And then I've been doing a Sunday show for the past 8 years. It became quite famous when Berlusconi left it, outraged by the amount of questions that we were shouting at him. So I think you should know that, because even though I'm pleased to be chosen to be one of the letters to you about Italy, I think you should know also that I may be quite biased on my point of view. But let's go back to the letters. So we were at that night when Monti left Montecitorio and he was quite alone. And we all had this idea that Rome could become a North European capital, the beginning of a new era for Italian politics. Austerity dawn. Mario Monti's government didn't last long. Dry, effective, devoid of any rhetoric, is gone very fast. Meanwhile, the Italian crisis is deepening and is becoming more and more incomprehensible. The elections have produced a political stalemate, and then suddenly the papal seat was empty. The Pope may be a world leader, but here in Rome, we feel he's part of our government system. Well, at least we have a Pope, Pope Francis now. Sì, un taxi a Cristoforo Colombo 90 al gruppo Espresso. Grazie. There's been a lot of discussion about Italian crisis and recession, but I think there is a very easy way to measure the depth of it. This is 5:15 in the afternoon on a normal working day. Normally on this road you would have traffic not moving. And instead, you know, traffic deadlock, the famous iconic image of Italy, is actually gone. You remember that scene in the movie The Italian Job? Well, I don't think at the moment you could provoke as easily a traffic jam. It's really that bad, and not taxi either. So this is the oldest part of Rome, is the Jewish ghetto that has been lived in forever since the very beginning. And this street is called Portico di Ottavio. Portico is portico. And this is home. What I was saying about traffic is not just an impression. According to ISFORT, which is the Istituto Superiore Formazione e Ricerca per I Trasporti, an institute that makes data research about traffic, in 2011, the traffic has decreased in Italy by 14%. In 2012, last year, the decrease has reached 20%. For the first time in many years, if you watch at the traffic during weekend, it seems that Italians are cutting out pleasure. Germany must be happy. One of the tensions in Europe about the Italian crisis, and one that nobody really likes to mention, is the Italian lifestyle. The much celebrated Italian gusto, the bella figura, is today considered the symbol of financial irresponsibility, which has led us to the present disarray. Italians have lived too well and spent too much for it, says Berlin. Well, maybe. Certainly, this unspoken ethical interpretation of the crisis has given a very strange twist to the political debate in Europe. It looks like the return of Lutheran versus Catholic. It certainly is the return of the traditional division between Northern and Southern Europe. And here we come to Silvio Berlusconi. The very symbol of a nation enamored with wealth to a point of ridicule. And, more importantly, to the point of denial. Silvio Berlusconi, until his resignation in November 2011, kept repeating that there was no crisis in Italy. I ristoranti sono pieni ed è molto difficile trovare un posto sugli aeroplani, ripeteva. Restaurants are full and it's very hard to book a seat on an airplane, kept repeating, to the very end. But in truth, the whole nation has been in denial. The recent election has been a hard awakening. The ballot has produced a surprising result. The new movement led by Beppe Grillo has scored 1/3 of the vote. The center-left, led by Pierluigi Bersani, has won another third, with an advantage of as little as 100,000 votes, more or less. Berlusconi, yet another third. None of the three parties can govern alone. Center and right cannot seal an alliance, not after 20 years of deep clashes. Meanwhile, there is Beppe Grillo, who does not intend to play according to present political rule and refuses to seal an alliance with either left or right. So the country is at a standstill. Who is Grillo and what does he intend to do? That's the question of the day in Italy. Grillo is a stand-up comic turned leader. Once again, Italy seems to produce a hybrid political phenomenon, combining social consensus around outsider and media-savvy personalities. Berlusconi was much the same, in his case, a crooner. Many political analysts believe Grillo is indeed a sort of new type of Berlusconi. The same way Berlusconi played television well, Grillo has proved a master of internet. But for me, Grillo's personality isn't the point. What's more important, a more substantial factor in his success, is the unhappiness, the rage, and the lack of faith that has grown in this country. I Grillini, Grillo followers means this word, according to recent studies, are young, lower middle class, with their hope for the future ruined by the crisis. Their solution lies not in the socialist heaven still promised by the left, nor in the aggressive mobility promised by the right. They think that both parties are a failure, that the state itself in Italy is a failure. They feed on a vision of the present crisis as fueled by financial greed and international institutions. Accordingly, they are against parties, banks, and euro. They may have a point, but there is a problem. So far, they haven't really proposed any solution to the crisis, except a vague call for a society with less consumerism and more direct participation, via internet, of course. A citizenship society. In fact, they call themselves citizens, like the French Revolution, the American Revolution, and as old Rome. And I think this is a moment to take you up to old Rome, which is my terrace in the heart of the ghetto. This terrace put us on a lower level than all the churches around us. So this was the Jewish ghetto, as I said. And in the Middle Age, and later on in 14th, 15th, 16th century, one way for the church to control this area was to build around monasteries. So we are surrounded by 16 cupolas, plus the cupola of the synagogue. So let me return to my letters. At the moment, it seems we are floating. We are a country suspended between 20 years of heavy political clashes between Berlusconi and people against Berlusconi, and a crisis nobody knows really how to tackle. It is not the most optimistic letter I have ever written, but you know, I think this is really Italy today. The lack of hope. In a nation always bright with enthusiasm, always ready to adjust and perform, is probably the single most telling sign of the time. This is probably why, when the new Pope announced from the balcony his name of Francesco, Francis, even the super secular Rome applauded with enthusiasm. Saint Francis was the son of a rich merchant turned friend of the poor, and I think there is a lesson there. The oldest king of Rome, which we still consider the Pope, has played a very significant role in this crisis, bringing out many feelings people have had bottled up. This was made clear to me the day Pope Benedetto left the Vatican to go into retirement. He flew over the Eternal City in a white helicopter, hovering over the old Tiber, the grand ruins, the stately Baroque piazzas. I'm sure you have seen it in London because it was quite spectacular. The citizens of Rome, if you remember, came out in huge numbers to wave him goodbye from the street and terraces of the city, like this very place where we are now. Catholic and atheist, believers and skeptical. I had the strong sense that they, or I should say we, because I myself, even though I'm not a Catholic, watched the flight and waved to the Pope. The day we were driven to his show by something that was like homage, because it brought consolation and it was a reminder of the former glory of Rome.
Letter from Italy was written and presented by Lucia Annunziata. The producer was Tom Alban. And tomorrow we have a unique insight into the thinking of the new political force in Italy, Beppe Grillo's five-star movement, from one of its young MPs, Carlo Sibilia. And you can find out more about all five contributors to the series on the Radio 4 website. This is BBC Radio 4. It's 12 minutes to 1. Now here's the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office. On behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 today, Wednesday the 24th of April. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, Trafalgar, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and Southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Southern Iceland, 990, slow moving, losing its identity by 1800 Wednesday. Low 100 miles west of Shannon, 1014, moving rapidly northeastwards, losing its identity by same time. High Biscay, 1025, slow moving, dissipating by that time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Utsira. Westerly 6 to gale 8, decreasing 4 or 5. Showers, moderate or good. South Utsira, 40s,